Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I sat down and did what all bad Christians do, which is flick your Bible open for advice.
Fiona Goodwin shares her story about why she turned her back on life as a nun. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, March 22nd, 2011. I'm Sarah Erickson. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan worked out an adapted schooling system today at the United Way Education Summit. He says the No Child Left Behind Act needs to be reformed. Travis Cochran reports.
More than 1,200 educational leaders came together today to discuss how to change staggering statistics in L.A. County, like the 40% dropout rate, which has not changed for the last 10 years. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villagrosa was at the 2011 Education Summit and said those rates are unacceptable.
It boggles the mind, the number of brilliant young men and women that we've lost, that won't graduate from high school, won't go on to college. But think about what we could have done.
Throughout the summit, educators challenged the status quo. There were many ideas and no silver bullet. But the idea that technology needs to be more incorporated into the system dominated the conference. Retired CEO of Jefferies & Company and former ambassador to Uruguay, Frank Baxter, spoke about what he calls a blended model.
Can you fix the Model T? Sure. Can you fix the Model A? Sure. But there's a better model, which is called a blended model, where it's partially human, partially technology, with more time spent on technology.
The blended model is already at a few schools, and Baxter is pushing it to more. Elise Buke, the president and CEO of United Way of Greater Los Angeles, said leaders need to focus on middle schools. Her idea is to target kids when they're young so they're ready for high school.
We have to advocate for change. We have to demand that we are not going to wait and let another kid slip through the cracks.
Politicians, businessmen, and educators at the event proposed an array of ideas, but they all agreed that it takes more than educators to make a change at the school level. And by coming together, they can combat that 40% dropout rate in LA schools. Travis Cochran, Annenberg Radio News.
The Cal State University School Board voted to reduce enrollment next semester by 10,000 students. Cal States are anticipating Jerry Brown's state budget cuts to the tune of about $500 million. The trustees also asked the 32 universities in the system to reduce their budgets. This could mean higher tuition and lower pay for university professors and workers. Governor Jerry Brown has been in office for less than 3 months, but a new field poll shows that 48% of California voters who were polled like the governor. However, those same voters are pessimistic when asked about where California is going. 64% say the Golden State is on the wrong track. President Obama said today the presence of U.S. forces in Libya will soon be scaled back. He says he's confident the U.S. can hand over control of the region to other nations in a matter of days. France has proposed that a committee of nations will be formed to oversee air operations in response to Muammar Gaddafi's attacks on his own people. The U.S. and European allies have been conducting airstrikes over Libya for 4 nights now. They are enforcing a no-fly zone. Trenise Ferreira spoke with people in L.A. about their opinions of the conflict.
Almost 7,000 miles away, a country in North Africa is in shambles. Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi will not step down and is willing to kill his own people to stay in power. Over the weekend, the United Nations passed a resolution to instate a no-fly zone to prevent Gaddafi's forces from attacking the people. Under this resolution, Libyan aircraft are not allowed to fly over specific regions of the country. I went to the Crenshaw Mall in LA to see how people felt about the conflict. Of the 20 people I stopped, the majority of them had no idea what was happening in Libya. Even to USC students, the conflict is so far away that it is difficult to defend or reject U.S. involvement.
I definitely have to do more research into it to see all the sides of it before I really make like a big decision, but at the surface, I would say no, I'm not in favor.
I guess it's not bad that we've like we've interfered because America does, quote unquote, have like a responsibility to protect the people. And I know I do have like also mixed feelings, like I don't know if we should be intervening because it doesn't really have anything to do with us.
Well, from the limited amount that I've read, it seems like he was doing it to protect civilians, which I guess is a noble idea. But I think America also has a history of interfering in other countries' issues.
I did find one woman who had a clear-cut position on the conflict. Edie Bello Sandoval strongly opposes U.S. involvement in Libya.
I'm against. The reason is I don't think we should be there because Gaddafi is dangerous. It's not like Castro or other, you know, dictators. He's a dangerous guy. You know, he can do anything, and I'm opposing that.
This woman fled the Castro regime in Cuba. She believes that our interference in Libya could hurt the people more than it helps. Sandoval also said that if we stay involved, more civilians could be killed because of Gaddafi's refusal to let go of power. The U.S., Britain, and France plan to increase their military presence in Libya in support of the UN resolution. Trinice Ferreira, Annenberg Radio News.
Today marks the first anniversary for the hotly debated Affordable Health Care Act, dubbed Obamacare by its opponents. Many gathered at the Cedar Sinai Hospital to praise the legislation. Julia Dang has more.
Please join me as we sing to the ACA. Happy birthday to you.
Lawmakers and advocates for healthcare revision joined voices and sliced into a large white birthday cake to celebrate the one-year anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. The auditorium at Cedars-Sinai hosted a panel of speakers. Some spoke about how the act helped them. Others advocated continuing support for President Obama and the law. California's insurance commissioner Dave Jones doesn't see how anyone could not support the act.
The money that we want to go towards our physicians and our nurses and our hospitals and our community clinics, the insurance companies view as a loss. This law, the Affordable Care Act, makes sure that they put more of the money they're collecting from us and our employers into actual provision of health care.
The law was signed by President Obama just 1 year ago and will be phased in over a span of 3 years. For Nina Sharkey, the act brought about a change in health care coverage, but it wasn't one she'd hoped for.
The coverage as I have now is a shell of what I bought 20 years ago, and there are no laws which prevent them from changing coverage whenever they feel like it. Unfortunately, there is a wonderful provision in ACA that can't help me because it doesn't come in until 2014. There are 800,000 people just like me.
The act eliminates the clauses that exclude children who have certain medical conditions from being offered health insurance. LA Congresswoman Karen Bass says this act has met great opposition from Republicans in Congress. Conservatives believe that with the budget in such dire straits, the country cannot afford to pay for it. Although there are some who are excluded from the ACA's benefits, Bass believes that it does more good than any available alternative.
This is something that affects all of us. I spent 2.5 years at this hospital, coming to this hospital day in and day out with my stepdaughter, going through chemotherapy for leukemia. She's now going to be 20 years old, in great health. And the reason why she will have health care coverage today is because we're celebrating the one-year anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. Thank you.
Bass regrets that most Californians don't know enough about health care. She hopes these types of events will bring about a rise in public awareness. Julia Dang, Annenberg Radio News.
After heavy rains yesterday, the clouds have parted for a bit this afternoon, but expect more rain tomorrow afternoon with a high of 60 degrees. Tonight, we'll have lows in the upper 40s, and you can expect the same for tomorrow night. Later, on Annenberg Radio News, we'll talk to an engineering professor about how the earthquake led to nuclear crisis in Japan. We continue our ongoing series on people and places in transition. Today we have a story about a woman finding herself with unpredictable twists and turns. A well-planned life can quickly become the unexpected. And such was the case for Fiona Goodwin, as Sarah Golden reports.
From a young age, Fiona Goodwin wanted to serve others. 25 years ago, when she was deep in a teenage existential crisis, she became a born-again Christian. She moved from her London home to a convent in Italy, nestled between towering Alps and a glittering lake. She was on the path to become a nun.
There's something very seductive about being a nun. You are literally saying, I'm not bothered about possessions, I'm not bothered about a relationship, all I care about is being of service. I didn't think life was about being happy, it was about helping.
Before she took her vows to become a full-fledged nun, she returned to London to tell her family. Her stepfather called it intellectual suicide. Her mother worried for her livelihood. Fiona hesitated. She never got on the train back to Italy.
I sort of had an epiphany on the way to the Victoria Railway Station in London. I suddenly got this really, really uncomfortable feeling that I wasn't doing the right thing. I sat down and did what all bad Christians do, which is flick your Bible open for advice. And the verse that I read, I interpreted as that I wasn't to go.
Proverb 4:27 reads, "Do not swerve to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil."
And I knew that going to that convent, it wasn't my path, and that I had to be in the real world.
The convent was also refuge from something else, Fiona's sexuality. Up to this point in her life, Fiona had dated men.
I had some attraction to women, and I think I wanted to get away from all that.
She had been so sure a life of service was her calling. Sexuality, of whatever preference, was just not part of it. But now, Fiona felt lost. She hadn't even told the convent yet, as though she were keeping her options open. Then, one Saturday, Fiona set out to see an apartment in London. Swishing through the autumn leaves in Highgate Woods, Fiona saw a man, walking his Rottweiler, coming towards her.
He stopped in front of me, and I thought to have a chat. And he said to me, "If you don't have sex with me, I'm going to set my dog onto you." I was taken aback, but obviously, being English, I remained composed. And I looked at him, and I looked at the dog, and I said, I'll take the dog. And the next thing that went through my head was, I don't want this gentleman to be my first, not in the woods and not with the dog watching.
So she ran, with the dog right behind her. He leapt through the air. Fiona spun around, swinging her arm to fend him off and exposing the left side of her body. The dog sunk his teeth into her chest.
And I shouted out, "Jesus Christ," at the top of my voice. And the dog backed off. It was a miracle.
The man in the woods sent Fiona into a philosophical tailspin. It made her skeptical of her relationship with men. Finally, she realized it was time to leave the convent altogether. She phoned the Mother Superior.
She said, "Well, the devil doesn't want you to come either." I thought, ooh. I thought maybe the dog was the devil in the park, you know.
But Fiona had not abandoned her religion altogether. She joined a youth mime troupe to deliver a Christian message in Central America. Fiona played the part of Satan and spent months traveling from city to city dressed as him.
It was very slinky and a tight-fitting black suit. I had to look beautiful and nasty at the same time.
In Honduras, Fiona fell in love with the woman playing the Virgin Mary.
We both knew that we were going to go to hell as a result. It was hard to wander around in my Satan suit, knowing that I would be, as Satan, going to hell.
Yet Fiona loved the drama of it all, toying with fire and brimstone. She loved that she had found a way to serve through performance. She loved being in front of a crowd, the center of attention. She was on her way to yet another turning point. In 2003, she came to study spiritual psychology at the University of Santa Monica.
I was in class on this course, and I remember just standing up. It shocked me as it came out of my mouth. I know what I want to do. I want to be a stand-up comedian.
Fiona Goodwin, I am English, and I really am clever.
Comedy fit her. It always had. Take, for example, the story of the dog in the woods. On stage, Fiona turned that trauma into gold.
So I went, "Jesus Christ!" The dog let go. Now, some of you, cynically, are thinking to yourselves, "Jesus Christ was the name of the dog."
Humor was her mechanism to understand all the pain and complexities of the world, and herself. Right before her decision to do stand-up, Fiona admitted to herself what she subconsciously knew. She's gay.
When I came out of the closet, it was as if all of me came out. My personality, my humor, and then I get this crazy, shocking idea that I could do stand-up comedy.
Life on stage, which she once considered self-indulgent and frivolous, was actually the greatest service she could offer the world.
Life is hard enough. I think taking time out to have a laugh is not optional. Laughter heals people. And I had such a narrow idea about what being of service was. How can I make amends to the universe, to the world, for all the time that I have wasted not being me? And I guess the only thing I can do is to start being me.
Fiona's journey is about to take another unexpected turn. This month, her visa expires, and she must leave the U.S. or face deportation. Fiona is taking the opportunity to launch a world tour of comedy. She doesn't know where her next home is. For now, she says, she's a wanderer. For Annenberg Radio News, this is Sarah Golden.
Since Japan was hit with an 8.9 earthquake and resulting tsunami, the country has faced widespread devastation and instability at several nuclear reactor sites. USC Viterbi professor Naj Mishkati is an expert on the effects of earthquakes on nuclear plants. He spoke with me this afternoon about Japan's nuclear state and what we can learn from the crisis. Can you describe for me what is the situation in Japan right now in regards to the nuclear crisis?
The situation is not very, very good, unfortunately, because, again, I don't want to repeat what you and your listeners know, is the earthquake happened and tsunami, and then these nuclear power plants, they lost their off-site power, their diesel generator kicked in, the diesel generator got overwhelmed by the tsunami, and then we lost the coolant. Of course, the reactors, they shut down themselves automatically, but we still need to cool the reactor core to absorb the residual heat, and also you need to have a cooling and circulation in the spent fuel pool. And fast forward to recently, we lost the power and the cooling couldn't continue. That's why we went to some sort of a partial meltdown in some of those reactor pools, some of the reactor cores. And one of the reactor cores, reactor number two, had a breach of reactor pressure vessel, which we call it RPV, which means that there was some release of radioactivity from the reactor heart. And then the problem with the spent fuel pool, that they have been losing their cooling system, and some of them, the roof over them, in the case of reactor 3 and 4, got blown up. And there is a release of radiation to the environment.
Is this a situation that could have been prevented?
They have designed for withstanding the earthquake. The design basis for earthquake for these nuclear plants in Japan was to be able to withstand the earthquake of 7.8 or so on Richter scale. But they were hit by a 8.9 or 9 on the Richter scale.
I see. So it was more than they anticipated.
Exactly. And what we can learn from this, we need to look beyond design basis. And the other thing, we need to go back, which I've been sharing that with my USC students, we really need to go back and re-examine some of our assumptions that we had when we were doing safety analysis of these nuclear power plants.
Professor Mishkati teaches at USC's Viterbi School of Engineering. Now we check in with Caroline Vandegrift to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks. Well, tonight, coming up on Annenberg TV News, we have more about the relief effort in Japan. There's been numerous rumors that the relief efforts aren't going well, but the Red Cross says otherwise. Also, that controversial Kappa Sig email, we take a look into what this email means in today's society and what it says about how we view women. All that and more on tonight, Annenberg TV News, 6 p.m. And as always, you can check us out on the web at atvn.org.
Great. Thanks, Caroline. We'll check that out. That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Candace Winters, Stephanie Guzman, and Carl Nickenig. Chris Foy is our producer. Jessica Flores is the executive producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Sarah Erickson.